So one of the defining characteristics of a business that's high on the digital transformation maturity scale, at least to me, is to observe how much they've taken to heart the idea that they need to think and act like a software business, adopting the mindset of product management, of software engineering and technology architecture. But the biggest fundamental shift that I think defines digital transformation is the idea that you make your business programmable, that you enable people inside and sometimes even outside of your business to assemble new, innovative, improved products and services by exposing your business services as a set of technical interfaces, affordances, making your business accessible through code, what we'd otherwise refer to as an application programming interface or API. The challenge, even for the most mature digital businesses, is how you manage the sprawl of APIs that sprout up. How do you ensure that the people who rely on them understand how and when they can use them, and to ensure that they're available when they need to be and aren't when they're not? Hey, Disruptors, welcome to another episode of Digital Disrupted with me, your host, Paul Muller. Today, we're going to take a look into the world of API management. What is it? Why should I care? And how do I get started? A quick shout out to Rocket Software, again, for making today's podcast possible. If you haven't already, check them out at rocketsoftware.com to see why over 10 million IT professionals rely on them every day to run their most critical business applications, processes, and data. With that, let's get into the topic of API management. Our guest today is part of the senior leadership team at DigitalML, a firm that specializes in API management and governance. Please welcome to the show, John Bogard. Hey, John, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me. I like what you're building here.
Thank you for joining us. It's going to be fun talking about APIs. It's one of my passion points on when it comes to digital transformation, as you probably heard. But before we do, we've got the lightning round. Are you ready to play the game?
I am.
All right. Let's see how you go. First up, what would people say is your superpower, John?
The one I'm working on is being interested. I think interested connects to being able to listen, being able to have a growth mindset, being able to be curious with that, and the ability to listen, asking good questions and listening and asking more questions, and then connecting those to have a good conversation. And if I can combine being interested with interesting, interested and interested is a great superpower to have.
I love it. I've got to dig in on this one. You obviously listen to the show before. Every now and again, someone says something that truly piques my interest. They all do, but some of them really get my brain rattling. Was that a conscious decision you made, or something? Were you coached into doing it? What got you focused on that as a superpower?
My wife and I moved to New York a few years ago, and we had little small kids that we were bringing in, and we were trying to build a community and meet friends. And it was just a great way to collectively figure out how we were going to build a community and what we wanted to bring to the community. And at the same time, we were thinking about the kids' school and how we wanted to give them a different mindset and reading things like a growth mindset from Carol Dweck. And so it was just kind of an iteration. And then I've tried it on with a lot of friends and family members and other people. And we've just kind of grown into it. I think it's a good marker. It's a good milestone. And that's a good way to try to build towards something that that could really be a superpower as you get it right. But you have to keep iterating. It's not just a come natural. You have to keep working at it.
Isn't that funny? I love that answer. All right, let's keep going. The most disruptive technology of all time.
I took a poll on this one, and I think written language. Written language led to shared communication connecting to the printing press with the line to phones and internet and disruptive technologies like the microprocessor along the way.
Legendary answer. The best quality a leader can have.
Character. Without character, without integrity, it's really hard to build on all the other qualities a leader has to have.
Well said. Your advice to people starting their careers?
Build valuable skills. Take more shots. Lose sometimes. Learn what it takes to miss a shot and then bounce back and have tenacity and then get yourself experiences. Build valuable experiences. Build something valuable. And then from there, figure out what you love to do.
Your inspired answer, I think. The first word that comes to mind when you think of the G word, governance.
Accountability. Ideally, governance is transparent. It's inclusive. It's responsive. It's measurable. It's efficient. It's not always, but ideally, it's really contributing to the value that's being governed. And done correctly, it's an enabler, and it contributes to the conversation that we're having around APIs, that trust versus trustless. And so ideally governance is leading to accountability.
Final question. If you could use technology to solve one world problem, what would it be and why, John?
This is a bit of a big answer, but insecurity. This might be too broad or too abstract, but I think, like the theme of this podcast, that intersection between technology and business, the intersection of technology and climate change and food scarcity and water and health, mental, physical fitness. If we can use technology to get rid of that insecurity, the anxiety that hangs over people or groups of people, I think that's a great application of technology.
Yeah, it's. I think it's always heartening to hear people, some of our guests, talk about the broader aperture of where, you know, where technology could be, because I think we all, you know, it's very easy to get wrapped around the idea that it's about your smartphone and it's about your, you know, getting your Uber Eats delivered or whatever it might be, right? I mean, these are all the things we get, you know, that touch us every day, or at least in the first world. But yeah, I mean, there are some big hairy problems that are still to be solved, and that I think tech's got a role to play. The hard part I find is trying to figure out how to get people excited about it, right?
And then where to start, and then how to build momentum, and then how to stay focused.
Yeah. Well, one of the ways we're going to be able to do that, of course, is to be able to make the world more programmable, which is what the introduction was about. I'm curious, what got you into the world of API management and governance, and how did you come to be where you are?
Yeah, a series of fortuitous events. I grew up in Calgary. I got recruited after school to San Francisco, and fortunately got into to software and got exposure to some early and building and becoming great businesses. And then I met my future boss, who's launching a software company from the UK into the US as part of the team that helped launch us in the US about 12, 15 years ago. And for the last 12, 15 years, I've been working with large enterprise customers and helping them on that path from integration and web services to design and governance to now APIs and services and events and working with large organizations as they build up a portfolio of these APIs, of these bundle-ready building blocks, and then making them available internally to their ecosystem, to their partners. And I've been very fortunate to work with closely with a lot of smart people at a lot of smart and big companies.
Yeah, so I'm super glad that we've managed to get you on the show, because this is a topic that I don't think is talked about enough. And I guess that is really one of the big problems we have when you talk about digital and digital transformation. The language that we use is often pretty nerdy. It's hard to follow if you're non-technical. And I'd say that if there was a Maslow's hierarchy of inaccessible jargon that turns off people in the boardroom, API would probably have to be the top of that pyramid, at least in my opinion. I mean, no disrespect to you. I've tried to write about it, blog about it, talk about it, and you can see their eyes glaze over the minute you say it. You start to, you know, I had an old adage from one of my bosses said, you get directed to the person you sound like when you're selling, right? If you sound like a techie person, they're going to direct you to the techies. And yet, having said that, it is probably the single most powerful concept in digital transformation is exposing your business as a set of APIs that enable your team to innovate, to create, to recreate, to reassemble your business into new and more powerful customer and employee experiences. But it is this, it's sort of shrouded in this jargon, as I said. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think digital transformation has become a hot topic, and that has now made it a boardroom conversation. I think you're right. Some of this does get shrouded in really deep tech, and it does have the risk of going as deep as you can all the way to the code of this, where I think what's changed is more and more examples of why this is so valuable and why this is so real. And if you look at these companies that are making the functionality, their business functionality, their core capabilities, what makes them special and different, and making them available as an API, and then looking at some of the examples of what's working, the market cap and the market size of these opportunities has become big enough that if you didn't know what an API was, the business case or the business opportunity and how it supports big drivers of digital transformation has become topical enough and real enough to make it more attractive to the business group. And I think we're seeing more and more business leaders driving the initiative and looking to partner with tech on how it would be enabled, rather than tech just trying to drive through, this is something we have to do.
Yeah, and I get the sense there's a growing familiarity with terms like API at senior management levels, but certainly when it comes to the boardroom, I think it's still sort of seen as a bit of woo-woo. Yeah, okay, the techies are talking again. Let's let them be or shut them down or end the conversation. With that, having said that, I think you've taken a bold stance on this. You talk about something called an API-first company. What is an API-first company?
Yeah, I think very similar to the intro that you made at the start of the show. These are the companies that are making functionality available as an API. But I think there's different iterations of what an API-first company is. There's obviously a business and technology strategy that gets combined into making that functionality available, whether it's booking a flight or travel booking or pharmacy benefits or payments or buy now, pay later. There's a very good understanding, I think, of the functionality that companies or solutions are offering and then how it gets made available, whether it's an API or via a UI becomes a little more secondary, perhaps. And so then you start looking at the different iterations and the examples. You've got a company like Twilio offering message and communication via an API. It's a standalone API that developers consume. They had a great marketing campaign around Ask Your Developer, and this was pre-public, or it's embedded in a car service app like Uber, allowing the drivers to message and call their passengers. Or there's the hybrid approach to API first, like a fintech company. And some of these fintech companies are valued at $5, $10, $90 billion that are offering digital functionality like payments or international money transfer. But while they're offering that core functionality as an API first, and they may be exposing it via pretty API, they've got to integrate with legacy backends and payment rails and banking networks. And so they're offering it as a standalone API, an API first, the value of the company, the revenue of the company, the customer experience is being delivered via the API. It's usually composed of multiple APIs. They're having to do a hybrid approach. And I think the third kind of iteration are those incumbent enterprises that we work closely with. They're racing to offer the functionality as an API, but they've got additional complexity that comes with the landscape. And so there's that goal state of offering and bundling functionality via an API, think payments or account management or customer verification, and then be able to make that available as composable building blocks, leverage across their business internally or across different channels. But that functionality is also going to be offered at the ATM or at the branch or in the clinic. And so sometimes it may be offered as an API. Sometimes it may be hidden behind a pretty user interface. And then sometimes it may just expose information that can be used by, say, a doctor in the office looking at your charts on his iPad.
So those are, I think, all great examples. And I know myself when I first started looking at, you know, at this, the sort of idea of breaking down business apps into a series of APIs to confer greater agility internally, but also that unexpected benefit of people being able to take those APIs and monetize, you know, maybe a core capability that you've built inside your business and sell that capability to others, as you say, as a service effectively. I got really excited by the concept. It just seemed like the logical thing to do. But I came to learn it's not as simple as just going, well, let's take this business app and put a programming interface in front of it and open it up internally or open it up to the world. There are consequences of doing that and there are complications that arise from doing that. Do you want to talk a bit about what some of the challenges are as you start to move to an API-first model?
Yeah, maybe before we come into the challenges, I think there's a few examples that give some validity to it. And I think one of the things that's changed in this space and also comes back to the board level discussion is it's not just a few people touting the benefits of APIs and API first. There's a very famous mandate from Jeff Bezos as Amazon was trying to launch new order management functionality and the mandate around exposing services as web services then as APIs, which then led to faster time to market and then became a direct link to the creation of AWS. And then you're seeing CEO like Brian Armstrong at Coinbase last week published a blog on operational efficiency at scale. And so you've got a very big, important public company CEO, part of the blog, calling on examples of Amazon where they're going to do API, they're going to publish APIs instead of having meetings. They're going to create these APIs and shared services so that product teams and product owners can leverage and share building blocks and functionality across things like trade crypto and account management and transfer money. And they're doing that because it works. It adds to scale, to time to market, to innovative offerings. But you're right. There are some disadvantages. It is not easy just to slap something together and call it an API. And it's complex. And I think while for enterprises, executives have largely bought into digital, we're seeing complexity. There's complexity under the covers as you try to expose the logic and the data and unlock that from legacy systems or from new systems. There's complexity in the provider of that functionality, the owner of that functionality, which becomes the owner of the API, and then all the different consumers. And what happens when you launch some new functionality that's really good? Well, everybody wants it. And then there's reliance on internal stakeholders and third-party stakeholders. Sometimes your third parties are vendors that are offering you the functionality that you're going to blend and combine to create your own unique experiences. And then they change their version, and that has an impact on what you're providing. And then there's scale. And so you got all the complexity that goes with this. And plus, you know, creating great products at scale, whether it's physical or digital or APIs, it's difficult. And so I think one, you bring up some good points on complexity. Two, it is working, and it is working at scale, and there are a lot of great examples to point to. And then three, I think there's a growing industry. And so while some of the business and board level conversations are sometimes not attached to what really matters to those stakeholders, ask any developer or technical person, and I think the vast majority knows what an API is and has built out a phenomenal ecosystem on providing support for those APIs and the entire life cycle that goes with it.
Yeah, no, I think that's and I appreciate you taking the time to give some examples. Like, I mean, the Jeff Bezos one's probably the canonical example that I use when talking to organizations about the problem we spoke about at the beginning of the show, which is the really forward-leaning transformative CEOs, are the ones who are most familiar with these topics, who understand the benefit of decomposing your organization into these programmable chunks. And I think what's you know, great about Jeff's email that he sent out to all of his people, which I think was eventually publicly revealed, was he talked about, you know, he made some very specific, gave some very specific guidance, which for the non-initiated or the uninitiated might seem a little opaque, but what he was really trying to avoid was some of the issues that API governance is really meant to solve, right? You know, don't bypass the API, don't use special hacks to get to the data at the back, because if you do that, you're going to make the, or it might be fast and expedient in the short term, but it's going to create fragility for the organization in the long term. Are there some, maybe get some specific examples of the sorts of challenges organizations who don't put in place API governance and management might need to think about. I mean, one of the ones that jumps to my mind, for example, are things like, well, even just knowing what APIs are out there, right? Like, what can I do? What is available? Because, you know, one of the big problems in tech, of course, is a lot of developers wind up reinventing a wheel that already exists. That's one example I can think of. There are other examples of where API management can really help an organization either build faster or stay more stable in the face of a lot of change.
That's a great topic, and it kind of it ties back to that combination of governance and consistency and reliability and composability versus speed and enablement. And I think there's always that pull between what the business wants and what the developer wants, how the developer can go as fast as they can versus what needs to be built. And so I think what we're seeing from our perch in the space is one, governance can be an enabler as long as it's baked into the process, it's transparent, it's visible, And then it's configurable. It's tailored to the event that's being governed. I think too, there's different levels of governance based on what you're trying to govern. And so if you look at an enterprise, they probably have thousands of APIs, plus thousands of legacy web services, thousands of applications, thousands of events and messages coming on board. And the race is to build out and expose that functionality and composable and reassemble building blocks. And so from a governance perspective, that provides a level of composability. And with governance, there's security, there's policies, there's frameworks and standards and patterns. And so there's a lot of different components of that governance. And so I think what we're seeing is a few things. One is baking that into the process. Two is shifting some of the governance and the security and the policies and the frameworks left. So it becomes part of the process, but it also comes along for the ride as you're building out your interface, or as you're building out your implementation, or as you're reusing that and getting approval. It's very transparent and automated and easy to see. And then with transparency, with automated, with configurable and flexible governance comes decentralization. I think for a lot of big companies and for a lot of companies that are building out APIs, we've moved some of the complexity to a distributed environment where, you know, in some levels, it's a little bit easier managing a big monolithic system where all your claims data or customer data is wrapped into one system. Now, it's really hard to make changes. It's really hard to get time to market. It's really hard to get collaboration and reassembly, but it is all in one spot. And as you distribute that into monolithic applications, you're also distributing the complexity that goes with that, the approvals, the roles, the permissions. And not everybody's built to or has the skill set to accommodate that. And so with some of this governance and the automation and the decentralization, it tends to fall on a small group of people in enterprises, probably architects, to define those governance patterns and frameworks and ensure security and policies are there. But done right, it can be automated. It can be just part of the process, and it's very transparent. So it's just easier to follow, it's easier to audit, easier to govern, and then easier to make exceptions rather than having to wait days or weeks or months for something that needs to be changed.
Question that sort of sprung to mind as you're talking about this, this all sounds really positive. What is it, do you think? I asked you the question, what's the first word that comes to mind when you think of governance? I think every time you use that word specifically, I guess, you know, maybe less so in Europe, where it seems to be a term that is maybe greeted with a bit more affection. But certainly my experience in the United States is the G word, the governance word, tends to be almost immediately synonymized with government. And there's sort of a general mistrust of that. Yeah, I see you nodding on the call here. Tell me a bit about what your reaction to that is.
I'm keen to hear your take too. I think governance is handbrake. It's people looking over my shoulder and tell me what I can't do. And I don't think it's always, you're right, it's not always seen as affectionate. Big G governance, and it's going to slow us down. I think when you unwrap that and it starts tying back to things like, how do I ensure that what I'm building is growing properly? If I have too few, then I don't have the business functions available to reuse these and reassemble and support digital transformation, which means I'm going too slow and I can't make changes fast enough. But if I have too many, I've got duplication and redundancy. And so how do you solve that? Well, actually, governance in that case does work. It provides a level of accountability and transparency and assurance that what we're building is actually reliable and consistent. And then you apply that to the real world. Well, you're creating these APIs and you're going to make them available as part of your customer experience. And it becomes really embarrassing when your interface, the contract to that API of this is the functionality we're going to provide and this is how you're going to consume it. Well, there's spelling errors in that. Or I've defined payments one way here and payments another way here. And now my customers are trying to figure out, well, what does this mean? And so there is a solution and governance is a good way to solve that while adding the reliability and time to market. But you're right, it does have connotations, especially for platforms or for initiatives that are just getting up to speed and have, we got to go fast on their radar.
My take is similar to yours. I think that it's number one, it's cultural, as I talked about at the beginning. I think different cultures tend to have a different view of government, benign, beneficial, or potentially, shouldn't be trusted, bureaucratic, right? So number one, I think it's through the eyes of the lens of the audience. But I think the other is, of course, how you implement it. You mentioned the comment, decentralized governance is a really helpful concept, right? If everything's got to go to the grand poobah for a decision, you're creating bottlenecks. It's going to be boring. It's going to be slow. It's going to be bureaucratic. If you can figure out a way of responsibly decentralizing it, you put the information in the hands of the people, allow people to make more informed decisions through, maybe an example would be like Wikipedia, right? It doesn't necessarily, it has some governance, but it's relatively light touch. And it's really only there to manage change, which is really where most organizations, I think, become most vulnerable with APIs, right? Is that when it's not the creation of them that's the problem. That's easy. It's the change becomes the problem. And just to give you an example, if you've ever been to a corporate website and someone's made a change to the website, you get a 404 error, right? You get a page not found. We've all been there. We've all seen it. When you create a web service, an API for your business, and someone changes it and doesn't tell the person who's depending on that API it's changed, you get the corporate equivalent of a 404, but with one of your most critical business applications. Not to be too dramatic, but people can die. Bad stuff can happen, right? Packages don't get shipped, funds don't get transferred, flights don't fly. And so my sense of it is that this is why I think there's a maturity element to this thing is that when you truly understand how important these APIs become to the daily functioning of your business, you need the same level of governance over how that they are changed, in the same way that if someone went to change anything in your accounts receivable or accounts payable, your general ledger, you would apply some governance to it, right? That's what your accounting team's there to do, right? Is to keep track of the changes to the general ledger. This is just your general ledger, but of all of your software assets. I think the biggest problem we have is the maturity side of things. And unfortunately, the word governance just has negative connotations for a lot of people. And I think gets in the way of, along with the jargon, I think it gets in the way of people understanding that this is actually a force for good rather than a bureaucratic thing. Thoughts?
I completely agree. I think there's a maturity aspect to this, and as providers of those APIs become more mature and look at how their consumers are consuming it, as the consumers look at what the providers are offering and say, hey, this is great, but can you do this? And we want more. As the enterprise is looking at their portfolio of building blocks and looking at what is my coverage, what are my gaps, what's good, what's not, why? Well, what's good, what's not, why becomes this transparent governance model as a way to measure and align to that maturity model. And then from a cultural perspective, I think you're right on North America versus Europe versus Asia Pacific, but also the culture that we're seeing now is more collaboration between business and IT. For a long time, developers were the key stakeholders for APIs, but now you've got business stakeholders that want to not just a seat at the table, they want to help define the priorities. They want to help define the alignment. They're certainly helping define the opportunities. And then as you get these reusable or reassemblable or bundle-ready building blocks, well, it does start opening up a very interesting self-service innovation conversation. You can start mixing, matching components to offer new products. You can start building on a customer journey. If you're in a retail company and you're offering buy now, pay later or buy online, pick up in store. Well, there's probably 15 core building blocks that make that happen, but you start reusing those and reassembling those to offer and support a wedding registry and then a baby registry. And all of those are reusable shared building blocks, but you do need a level of transparency and governance to ensure that you can actually reuse those as is, and that decentralized model becomes very interesting. And then, one last thought on this is that I'd be keen to get your take on the culture between business and IT, because business is more and more driving the opportunities here, and salespeople are creating contracts that are reliant on APIs. And so I think there's more conversation and collaboration that's happening between the business and IT stakeholders, and there needs to be a facility for those conversations to happen and for those decisions to be made.
Yeah, look, I definitely think it's getting better. My experience has been, though, that, or at least maybe let me reflect, be clear about what I'm trying to reflect on. Due to the nature of what I do, I spend a lot of time talking to people about things like digital transformation and business strategy. It almost tends to self-select for the people who are already predisposed to hear the message, which means that they do have a higher degree of maturity and openness to it. I do worry sometimes that I've got kind of confirmation bias around the state of maturity of business, because again, the people who want to hear from me are the people who tend to be already thinking about this stuff. Yeah, I'd be curious actually. I probably need to go and do some more primary research to work out where the world's at with maturity of adoption of things like APIs or becoming API first organizations. It's speaking about being interested, you got me interested to go and do a bit more research as to the state of the nation. I wanted to have a chat to you. About what it is you guys do. So Digital ML, for those of you who are listening and haven't had a chance to jump on, have a look at their website, actually create tools to solve some of the problems we're speaking about. I'm just curious, as people are looking at putting tooling in place versus a giant Excel spreadsheet, when they're looking at putting tooling in place to start to manage some of these things, whether it's from you or your competitors, they look at this, what are some of the tricks and traps for people who are looking to put in place API management? Are there some things that people should be looking out for as they start to go down this path?
That's a good question. Thanks. I think one, there's a very well-defined end-to-end life cycle that a lot of companies are following. And I think there's more focus on the plan, design, build part of the life cycle that complements a multiple deploy and run process. So I think one, you know, from our perspective, we're working with a lot of customers that are looking for that holistic catalog. And again, they're looking to solve the problem of how you started the conversation. A lot of organizations are flying blind with what do we have, what's good, what's not, how do we address the current sprawl, how do we ensure that we don't end up with another sprawl in 3 to 5 years. And so that holistic catalog or portal or marketplace provides a good view of what's good, what's not, and then how to make it available. I think too, there is more focus on that collaboration of plan, design, build with business and IT stakeholders, and then more focus on how to enable and force multiply the building blocks and how you make them available and reassemble. Force multiply hard to find developer talent and let them focus more and more on the business logic and the code and the user experience while automating a lot of the manual developer work. And then force multiply how product owners and business analysts and architects are able to bake in this process. And then I think what we're seeing with a lot of our customers is you're going to have multiple environments where these APIs and events and services and messages are run and multiple runtimes that do that. And so having an abstracted view of this and a way to automate a lot of these manual processes while building up your portfolio of bundle-ready building blocks and then make them available has been a big push. I also think just as a tie back to the conversation we were having on governance, we're seeing more and more regulatory and compliance needs. There's internal regulatory and compliance and audit around security, around who owns what, who's consuming what happens if we need to make changes. And then there's federal regulation and compliance in the U.S. The OCC is looking at banks to have a view of what their governance process is, how many APIs they have, who's consuming them. In the UK, PSD2 has been a big driver around that. So I think more and more as APIs become a way to expose that functionality, the ability to have a view, to drive the reuse, to drive the collaboration, to manage the complexity, to automate and enable, while also having reporting and visibility is going to be more and more of a driver.
That's interesting because obviously I didn't realize that last element of it. And I think I drew a comparison between the integrity and governance of a business's financial records and management of its API records. But what I'm hearing now is in the same way that your finances need to be audited by a government trusted entity, especially for critical businesses, we're saying the same thing's now basically happening with the catalog of APIs that they're presenting. I didn't realize that.
Correct.
Okay, well, that's great. Super conversation. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. If people are interested in learning more about becoming an API-first company and some of the tools and techniques, trips and traps, where can they go to learn more?
Thanks. Our company website is digitalml.com. We've got a great resources and white papers. We've got great blogs and customer case studies or customer presentations. And that's probably a great place to start, digitalml.com.
Awesome stuff. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Before we go, the show sponsor, Rocket Software. Again, big shout out to Rocket. Thank you for sponsoring yet another episode of DD. They've got a set of values they talk about that matter to them: empathy, humanity, trust, and love. Just curious, what matters to you right now, mate?
I'm thinking a lot about empowering team members and empowering customers, empowering friends and family and kids. I think Rocket Software's empathy, humanity, trust, and love are great, and empowering goes right with that one.
Awesome stuff. Well, thank you, John, again. And thanks to Rocket Software one more time. And thank you for tuning in. Not that you can tune in because you don't have a radio. This is a podcast. You know what I mean. Thanks for playing in. Oh, thanks for downloading. There you go. If you like what you heard, please do give us a thumbs up on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you happen to be listening. Probably not the radio. You can also reach out to me at Extrastreams on Twitter or our show sponsor at Rocket with any questions for our guests, ideas for topics you'd like to hear covered on future episodes. And if you are on there, just leave us a review. Would super love that. With that, we'll see you all next week. Stay disruptive, everyone.